Friends, roadies, countrymen, and all listeners around the world, here we go again. It's me, J.E., John Edmund, once more. And this month, it's Father and Son Month. So, over to the younger set. Here we go.
Hi, this is John Ross Edmund, continuing from where I last ended my previous podcast. I was asked by my dad to chat about my career as a pilot and how my passion for aviation all started, as aviation has been running in our family for many years. I mentioned before, my dad was also a pilot, or in the Rhodesian terms, a blue job. Go listen to his song on any one of your favorite music platforms. I wish I was a blue job, up in the sky. I wouldn't have to walk if I could fly. I lastly spoke on flying the mighty Hercules, the C-130, for SAFAIR, and decided to call it quits flying in the war zones, as Nadia, my wife-to-be at the time, was getting quite stressed out because a few times while on a Skype call, I suddenly shot out of my chair and had to put on my flak jacket, my hard hat, and make a run for the bomb shelter. She was not impressed. I never really thought that I would ever become a helicopter pilot, and the thought of flying helicopters never really fancied me. But one afternoon, a good friend of mine, Herman Bursma, actually one of the folks that I had met while working as an instructor in Sanin, he gave me a call, telling me he had started his helicopter license, and he was really enjoying it, and said I should also consider doing mine. I was not really that interested until he invited me to come fly with him on one of his hour building exercises in order to obtain his commercial pilot's license. I accepted his offer and drove out to Wonderboom Airport, which is just to the north of Pretoria. I arrived all eager, and to my surprise, it was one of those tiny little R-22s. It was quite scary, as it was a hot summer's day, and usually during the summer months, they take off the doors of the helicopter to help keep cool inside the cabin. Quite ironically, I am scared of heights, but flying in an aeroplane does not bother me at all, as I feel really safe inside the airframe. However, having the doors off on the little helicopter was another story. A bit uncomfortable for sure, but I just put on a brave face as I did not want to look scared in front of my friend, as I would probably never hear the end of it. We took off from Wonderboom and headed out towards the general flying area and flew around the Magaliesberg Mountains. It was a fantastic experience, and the freedom and abilities of a helicopter soon set in. I was hooked. After the flight, I went and did a bit of research and found out that it would cost me an arm and a leg to get a helicopter license, and I was definitely not in a financial position to afford it. So stepping back a few years, during my time as an instructor at 43 Air School, the training department was offering helicopter training packages for fixed-wing instructors. As I said before, I never really took interest in helicopters because at the time I was focused on becoming an airline pilot. I got the idea to give them a call and see if the offer still stood. It was really a long shot. The director of training, Mr. Stix, answered my request and he told me that this offer is long gone and that they don't do it anymore. But he said that the helicopter division's training was picking up and that they had a few big contracts coming up, so they may require helicopter instructors in the future. He told me that he would get back to me during the week, and that he would take a chance and run my request by the board of directors in the weekly meeting that they were going to have. I was quite surprised that he would go that far for me. I must have made a very good impression on him while I was working there in the past, as I always flew many hours a month for the school, and I had a very good safety record. I was never scared to shy away from any work that they offered me either. During the next morning, I received an email saying that the directors had met and that they had come to a decision. They were going to allow me to do my helicopter training, but of course there were certain terms and conditions. At the time, 43 Air School was operating a satellite base in Bishu, King Williamstown. Not many instructors wanted to go there as it was in the middle of nowhere. They said I can do my helicopter training, but I will need to be based in Bishu, and while I was completing my training, I had to give fixed-wing instruction until I was a qualified helicopter instructor. I said to myself, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I've got to take it. So I started in November 2009, and then my wife-to-be and I were getting married the following year in January 2010. After we got married, we moved down to the Eastern Cape and settled in a little seaside town called Kids Beach. It was a fantastic place to live, especially for newlyweds. The sea and the beach was literally a stone throw from our little bungalow. We lived in Kids Beach for about 6 months, then we decided to move into East London, as Nadia got a job there. And to save her traveling, we had to move into town. I unfortunately also had to travel back and forth between King Williamstown and East London, which was about 80 kilometers one way. But luckily, there were other instructors and we had a lift club. Thankfully, back then, the petrol price was also a little bit more affordable. I completed my helicopter training in 2010 and then started to work as a full-time helicopter instructor. We were training students from South Sudan. The Sudanese students came to the school basically with the clothes they wore. Some of them had never even driven a car, and now they were here to become pilots. With lots of practice driving the school's buggy up and down the taxiway as a coordination exercise, and then completing all the required flying lessons, we had them flying solo in a few hours. A funny story that I remember was on one rainy day when there was no flying due to the bad weather. We looked out the window at the road that led down to the main road and that led to town. And there it was. The buggy was driving out. We all ran after it and stopped the vehicle. We asked the guys, "And now? Where are you going?" They said, "Sir, we know how to drive, so we are off to town." We explained that they could not do that. The Sudanese students did very well with their theory exams and their practical side too. We did not have one training accident or incident during the whole course. I have also learnt a valuable life lesson from these chaps, especially to be grateful for what we have. The stories that they told about their struggles that they faced with the war in their country really touched my heart. As I said in my previous podcast, that Africa is all about power and no regard for the people of the land. Some of the guys even had gunshot wounds. When my time was up at the air school, I set out to go find another job, as the contract had come to an end, and we actually had no choice but to move on. So Nod and I packed up our lovely little flat that we were renting. The apartment was on the third floor, and it had a spectacular 180-degree sea view. It was probably the best place that we had ever stayed at, and we often talk about our East London days. We moved up to Pretoria and I managed to find a part-time job with Netstar, flying a Robertson 44 at night doing vehicle tracking and recovery. It was quite an intense job with no room for error. I also helped out another security company that did cash in transit protection and monitoring cable theft. One afternoon, I got a call from a friend who was a nature guide and a professional hunter. He asked me if I could arrange a helicopter to fly up to the northern parts of Mozambique, as they were busy with an elephant and sable antelope project in the Mahua area. It was a very long way to fly in a Robinson 44, but it could be done. An amazing trip. So I jumped at the opportunity and I managed to hire a helicopter from a company I had also assisted. They gave me the helicopter in good faith that the client would pay me once we had completed the job. Thank goodness it all worked out fine. I was lucky enough to have a faithful and trustworthy navigator with me on this trip. Yes, my wife Nadia. I could say it was almost a second honeymoon as we really went to some remote places. On the day of departure, I got this call from the nature guide's wife. She told me it's their wedding anniversary in a few days, and since he is so far away, would I mind to please take up a gift I said, sure I would, thinking it would be something small like a bottle of whiskey or something in that line. So the lady met us at the airport in the morning, and it turned out that it was a portable satellite TV set. I still don't know how I managed to fit it all in the helicopter, in between the 6 extra jerry cans of Avgas which was on the back seat. This was our reserve fuel, just in case some of the airports had run out. We also had our own personal luggage. Anyhow, it worked. We started the trip off at Grand Central in Midrand. In the first part of our journey, we flew to Kruger International Airport for customs. The next leg of the trip was to Vilanculos, where we had spent the night and enjoyed a fantastic Portuguese seafood platter that I can still taste today. Prawns, mussels, crayfish, and the catch of the day. It was drizzled in a porra peri-peri sauce that required the fire brigade to put out the burn, but it was worth it. We woke up very early the next morning, as we had a long day of flying ahead of us. Vilanculos to Beira, Beira to Quiliman, and all along the beautiful Mozambique coastline. I was really amazed at how colossal the mighty Zambezi River is, where it meets the ocean at Beira. I also thought to myself, there are not many places to land if we do pick up an engine problem. From Beira, we had a 2.5-hour flight inland to the base camp, which was just east of Mahua town. We were chasing the sun on this last leg, as the refueling stops along the way took much longer than expected. The total flight time was about 13 hours, excluding the time wasted on the ground refueling. So it was about a 2-day trip in total. The terrain in Mozambique is breathtaking, with these tall, stubby mountains that just shoot out of the ground in random places, some of them as high as 7 or 8,000 feet above sea level. The terrain is rough and harsh, and there is nothing in between. So if we had to crash there, the chances of us ever being found was probably not very good. The camp that we stayed at was quite primitive. It was a tented camp, and there was no cell phone reception, no electricity or running water. When it was time to shower, the camp staff would boil water on the fire, and they would fill up a small tank above the tent with hot water. So you had about 2 minutes of hot water, so you had to hurry up and wash fast. We completed the mission in Moz, and it was time to head home. The weather was fantastic the whole way, until we had to fly the last stretch from Kruger to Grand Central Airport. The escarpment was closed in by massive thunderstorms. Knowing well that many pilots had come short in these mountains, I made a wise decision to rather turn back to Kruger and attempt the flight the next day, which we did. Not long after the Moz trip, another opportunity came knocking on my door. A gentleman called me and asked me if I would be willing to move down to Kimberley for a few months, as he had customers that had just bought a Robbie 44 and they needed to learn to fly it. I set out to Kimberley, and on arrival I was introduced to my new students. They were diamond miners, and they mined alluvial diamonds along the Vaal River. The helicopter that they bought was going to be a very useful tool for them to operate more efficiently between their different mining sites. We started with their training, and the most challenging part of it all was the exams, as they were both very Afrikaans, so it was quite difficult for them to learn all these technical English aviation terms. But with lots of translation to Afrikaans and explanation, and me being fully bilingual, I managed to get them to pass the theory exams. One Saturday morning, on the 30th of June 2010, I collected the helicopter from its 500-hour MPI, which is a mandatory periodic inspection, or a service. I did a very thorough pre-flight as always, but coming from a big maintenance check, I was extra careful. I started up the R44 and took off from Kimberley Airport. I must have been airborne for about 4 minutes when suddenly I had an engine failure. We are still not sure what went wrong with the engine that day and why it failed. So I had to do a maneuver called an auto-rotation. This is a technique that helicopter pilots use to glide if there is no engine power. Unfortunately, I was not very high above the ground at the time, as the control tower instructed me to fly lower in order to accommodate an airliner that was departing. So with the engine failed, and to make it more challenging, the engine had also caught fire during the failure. I force landed the helicopter and managed to walk away unharmed, but the helicopter was destroyed by the fire. And it took the rescue team about 45 minutes to find me. I am very blessed to not have died that day. Just as a precaution, the medics took me to hospital for a checkup, and I spent a night or two under observation. Nadia, my wife, was pregnant with our first child, Talia, at the time. She was very stressed out about this terrible event and flew down to Kimberley to come visit me in the hospital. Luckily, the stress and trauma that she suffered did not cause any complications with the pregnancy. This is one of the reasons that the training took so long, and now the guys had to buy another helicopter, and that process does not happen overnight. They were initially very scared to do so after what happened, but I managed to convince them to keep at it, and they did. A few months later, they got their new helicopter, and about a week later, there was a freak hailstorm, and the heli sustained major damage to the rotors and the tail boom. Oh no! That also set us back another 3 months. Finally, we got it all together, and the two chaps finished their helicopter private pilot's licenses. I am still in touch with them today, and funny enough, a few weeks back, they called me to inform me that they had bought a bigger helicopter, and if I could please come assist them with some familiarization training. It was a great honor and pleasure to fly with them again and see how much their flying skills had improved over the years and that they were still flying. During my time at Kimberley, I got a call from one of the world's major airlines, Cathay Pacific, and I was invited to the final interview process in Hong Kong. I guess I could say, luckily I never got the job. Otherwise, during COVID, I would probably have lost my job and been stuck in Hong Kong. I was very disappointed at the time, as I had put in a lot of effort in preparation for the interview and had traveled a very long way to get there, and it was a dream of mine to become an airline pilot. But in the bigger scheme of things, I did not notice it at the time, but I was actually being protected by God our Father again, as He has a perfect plan for each and every one of our lives, and that was not my path. Sometimes we face major disappointments in life, and sometimes we don't understand why. I encourage each and every one of you to take heart and keep at it, and never give up, because we might not be seeing the bigger picture in the moment. I continued to fly helicopters, and my next adventure was to the town of Lichtenburg in the northwest province of South Africa. An agricultural sales company required a pilot to fly the directors and sales agents around. Luckily, this time the whole family could move together and we settled in Lichtenburg for the next few years. As aviation goes, I was given the letter saying that the company was liquidating and that I would be retrenched. Luckily, we had a backup plan, and Nadia and I decided to open up a restaurant, an Ocean Basket to be exact. Oh boy, was that hard work, especially dealing with the general public. We learned many lessons. We ran our restaurant for about 4 years and unfortunately had to close it due to financial difficulties. During the time that we had our restaurant, I had taken a bit of a break from the aviation sector. I did keep my flying licenses current during that period and did the odd flight when the opportunity presented itself. But not much at all. I was not happy as I was not flying. The restaurant business was draining my soul. After we closed the restaurant, I managed to get a job with a company called Solenta. They operate ATR-72 cargo aircraft in West and Central Africa. It was the only opportunity at the time, so I had to take it. The bad part about flying contract is it took me away from my family for 2 months or more at a time. And after 3 years of contract flying in Africa, I needed to find something local. Not that I did not enjoy it, but my family needed me home. Funny enough, the opportunity that came up was back in Lichtenberg. This is where I am currently flying for a fuel depot company. They have a Cessna 421 Golden Eagle and an Airbus EC-130B4 helicopter. I am very privileged to be able to fly helicopters and aeroplanes. I mostly need to thank my family for standing behind me during all these years of moving around and often being in and out of work. It has not been an easy road, but we always rise to the challenge and take it head on. As my dad says in one of his songs, pick yourself up and dust yourself down. Battles ain't won lying down on the ground. I have always treasured these words and made it my mission to never give up. Thanks again for listening to my podcast. In the meantime, take care, God bless, and stay safe.
Thanks, my boy. That was great. In closing, may I remind you all to like and subscribe to my YouTube channel. Keep an eye on my website, and should you want any of my music, it's available on most popular music platforms. Till next time, it's goodbye from Africa with Tutsin Salagashle and Zwakanaka.